everybody. Eve Harrow on Rejuvenation for the Land of Israel Network. It is September 21st, 2020, the third day of Tishrei, 5781. So if you think that this whole pandemic craziness is because of the Jewish New Year, it's because of the Jewish last year, 5780, then maybe we're good. Maybe we're moving to a new beginning. If you still think that someone ate a bat in China last February, then we still have to get out of 2020. But in any event, all is good. Does anybody still think that we ate a bat? Is it someone ate a bat? Anyway, I'm delighted to have online with me another out-of-work tour guide, but she's really so much more than that. Tamar HaYardeni, which is a beautiful name, especially for this season, incidentally, that we're coming up to now with Sukkot, because Tamar is the day tree, and HaYardeni is like the Jordan, right? And we've got these beautiful date plantations growing on the Jordan. So this is not her fake name. This is her real name. She didn't change it just for the show today. Tamar, thank you so much for joining me today.
I want to say about that the first time in my life that I went to Jordan, to Petra, I just had to take a picture with a date palm tree.
Of course. That could be your logo. Exactly. Exactly. So a few weeks ago, I interviewed Tamar a few years ago, for those of you who've really been with me for a long time. And just to show you what an exciting kind of person I am, like, I can't dance on tables, but for my husband's birthday a few years ago, I took him on a special tour that Tamar was giving in the old city of Jerusalem on the old hospitals and the old medical system in the old city. Places that you couldn't, it's not like it's a hospital now it's a school or something else, and she did a tremendous amount of research on that. And since he's a doctor, I thought that would be such a fun thing to do on his birthday. Yes, aren't I just like so much fun? I can do fun things too. I'm never going to do a podcast on what it looks like to have a lampshade on your head, but still, okay, there is another side. But anyway, a few weeks ago, in between the lockdowns, because as you all probably know, Israel is now at the beginning of another lockdown, I saw Tamar in the old city, group of tour guides that were doing what we call a hishtalmut, and I'll think about that in English in a second, like a review course on pools in the old city, especially during the second sample period. And so we were there for a few hours. We were probably the only people in the old city at the time was this group of tour guides, because there are no tourists and not too many other people. Anyhow, so we got to talking again. I hadn't seen her in a while. And that's because Tamar was in America for the last couple of years. So first of all, welcome home with your husband and your five children to Jerusalem. And maybe tell us, first of all, but what you were doing there. And then we're going to talk about all the things that you do, because Tamar, even without the tourists, is a very, very busy lady. So what was, I know made your English much better in America, but you don't have to go to America for 2 years to get your English better. So what were you doing in the States, and where exactly were you?
So we went to North Carolina, where we now call North Carolina. And we spent 2 years there because of my husband's work. It was actually a relocation. He ran the office of his company, which is a biotech company, doing really cool stuff. Now, since I'm a tour guide in Jerusalem, I was kind of like out of job, but I did the other thing that I really like to do, and that is writing. Mm-hmm. I several books, so I just spent my time in the forest of North Carolina doing that, and I'm happy to be back.
So one of the places that you write for, and you also put out your own books, is a magazine that I've been getting for many, many years. And they are not sponsoring this show. So this is coming just totally, because it really is a great magazine, Segula magazine, S-E-G-U-L-A. They have an English version and a Hebrew version. And really a very high level magazine in many, many ways that I've learned a tremendous amount from. So Tamar, you've been writing for them for a long time. What do you write about, and how do you decide what to write about?
Well, actually, it's interesting because we go back many years. When they started, I don't even know how many years was it, but many years.
I don't know if it's as much as 10. It could be a decade already. Wow. Cool.
Could be.
Okay.
I started with the Hebrew version, writing the... I have this column, I still have it, the column with riddles and crosswords and even cryptic crosswords, which I really like. But at a certain point, I decided that that's not what I want to do, the only thing that I want to do in a magazine of history. So So I started to write articles, and eventually I started this column of mine, which is called Tale of Trail, which is basically a story, a true story that happened in a place where you can go and visit. The idea for this column started with the previous editor, who asked me if I want to have this touring column. And I said I do, but I do want to do it differently, because usually what you have in this column is somebody telling you that you should go somewhere and then give you the spot, or you take a look at that and go to the other station and then see that. I didn't feel like that's what I wanted to do. I wanted the story, because I really like stories. And it worked out. And as you can see, it's still out there for quite many years.
So how do you decide what you want to do?
Okay, so if it was up to me to decide where in the land of Israel we want to go, it would probably be just Jerusalem. I was born in Jerusalem. I'm actually a ninth born generation here. So,
wow.
I didn't do anything for it. I was just born, but I raised the 10th generation here, which is really, I think, significant.
Yes,
and
very much
very
so.
Connected and rooted here. So, and I'm a tour guide here. I can guide all over the country, but I really don't see any reason to drive anywhere else. You know, all the hot stuff is actually here in Jerusalem. So, yeah, so it was up to me. I would just write about Jerusalem. There's so many stories. I mean, this is a city of 3,000 years,
yeah.
Right? So there's lots to tell. But my column is all about the country. So it's really hard to say. Well, at first, I had many stories about other places. So I just, you know, whenever I had the chance, I just told about a story about, you know, Mount Carmel or Eilat or something that happened in Haifa or whatever it was. Well, years have passed and the stories are already told, so I find it a little harder sometimes. I just, you know, I just read, I listen, I pick up stories all the time. And every, I would say, 4 to 5 volumes, I would definitely write about Jerusalem, because I'm waiting for that.
Sneak it in.
Yeah.
One of the things that I remember, because in addition to that medical course, you also taught, I've been on other tours that you've given, because you really are considered, if there is a specialist on Jerusalem, you're definitely in the top two, and I don't know who the other one is, but there's got to be somebody, let's be fair, okay? You do a tremendous amount of research, tremendous, and I want to ask you about that, but also what you do that I very much appreciate as a guide is you share your information. Sometimes you'll go on a tour or on some kind of educational thing with someone and they're showing you, they're very hard, and I'm not saying it's wrong, because you do a lot of work to get that information, and you're always very happy to send the pictures afterwards, to send the information, as opposed to perhaps being able to monetize it more yourself if you had the exclusive on it, because you want people to know. I think at your heart, you're really an educator, and it's more important for you to not have the exclusive on it, but that people should know what you research and get it out there as broadly as possible. So I just want to say in public, on the radio, how much I appreciate that. And I know that I'm not the only one either. But I mean, I imagine with the internet, of course, it's much easier to do research than it was in the olden days. You don't have to go down to the library and riffle through the stacks. But you have found things that, even though people have been doing research on Jerusalem for a long time, nobody else has come across. So how do you do that?
Well, I'm a curious person, and I along the years I've learned how to use all the tools that I have, and the internet is definitely a good source, not just for photos that people would, you know, upload, and it's not just from archives. People would sometimes, you know, get photos from their private album and put them on. So I'm saying that the web is really an incredible source of education, but it's not only that, not just knowledge and information, but there are other sources, and I'm married to speak Hebrew. I mean, this is my mother tongue. So I found out that lots of information about, well, obviously about the land of Israel and of course Jerusalem, which I'm so interested in, is in Hebrew. And let me give you an example. For there is this incredible website that I think belongs to Tel Aviv University, where they literally Xerox every page from previous, very, you know, old Hebrew newspapers from the 19th century, page after page after page. And
wow.
It's incredible. And you can just imagine what an credible first-hand source we're talking here. It's not me reading somebody that wrote something about, but I can actually read how, for example, they decided on establishing the neighborhood of Yamin Moshe in Jerusalem, or who paid for, I don't know, for the windmill, or for, so anyway, it's there, and all you need to do is just dig. So this is for the first thing, for your first question. I'm just curious, and I really like firsthand sources, and I found out that all you need to do is just dig down, dig deep, and just stitch everything together, and all of a sudden you have a story. It's really cool. Now, as for the other thing that you said about sharing, I got to tell you, and I'm saying this over and over again, because people always say, what you say, oh, this is so nice of you to share and give others the sources. And I'm like, listen, I put so much effort in finding it. What's the point of me having it on my own private secret computer? I mean, isn't it out there? I mean, isn't it just here to have everyone enjoying it? It's either me sharing it with other people that I guide, but I usually, since I guide lots of tour guiding courses, this is exactly what they need. They need all these photos and maps. And, I mean, what's the point of me showing it to them and then telling them, you can't have it? I think it's stylish, and also it's not what I'm there for. I'm there to educate, to help them be better guides, to help people know more about Jerusalem and the country. That's what I do. That's what I wanted to say. I do not understand why people do the opposite. But that's what people usually do. Most tour guides that I see are like, let me keep this and I will not share it. I mean, come on. I mean, it's not really.
Yeah, but you're unusual in that, because most people will say, I put the time into it, therefore I want to keep the information. And it's really marvelous. And you should know how many thousands of people who don't even know you, and I always give you credit, I don't know if other people do, you have been able to illuminate. For example, to be able to go and stand in front of a building, a modern building now, and pull out a picture of what it looked like 150 years ago, photography, 1850s, 1860s mainly, right? And the American colony people. And to be able to say, and this is what it was in its former life, and this is where it served. And look, by the way, there's nothing around it, because now this is in the middle of Jerusalem, but then this was at the edge of the city, if it was even in the city at all. It really gives people a very beautiful perspective of the development of the city that you love so much.
Exactly.
So,
and I want to say about this, that I heard tour guides saying, if I give you my photos, then what makes me special? Everybody's going to have the same great photos. And I'm like, listen, I've never heard of a tourist who asked me in advance, do you show a lot of photos? How many photos do you show? Are they yours? Come on. I mean, it's about you. I mean, why would
it's about how we present the story and the passion that we have for the subject. And yeah, exactly.
Just for information, the tourists do not need us. They can just, you know, grab a book or just apps on the web. No, it is us who they want to meet. And if you're special and if you're interesting and if there is the spirit that you bring with you, it doesn't really matter if you use 100 photos or none.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. No. Oh, I miss guiding. I miss being with people and showing them things and explaining the story and getting their thoughts on why it went this way and not that way and what could have been different and the whole interaction. I really hope that things calm down and we'll get that back soon. But, you know, you mentioned the internet and how you look for different things that have uploaded. The internet is not always, though, a source of real information, which is something that I don't know if you still do, but I know that you did for a long time, which is edit Wikipedia. Okay, most people think that you go online and Wikipedia is, and here I'm totally dating myself, like Encyclopedia Britannica of old, like a book that someone really did research on. And if you open it up, it's Torah Sinai. It's like Torah from Sinai, except that that's not the case with Wikipedia. It's an incredibly political and very rife with mistakes arena. So can you tell us a little bit about that? That must be so joyous for you and such a fun thing to do, but you do it.
I got to tell you that in the last, I would say, couple of years, well, especially when I was in America, I didn't really have much time for it. But yeah, and I think this is part, I mean, the idea of writing for Wikipedia, you don't get paid for it, you waste so much money, so much time on it. Why would people do that? I think, well, I can't say for other people, but I can tell about me, and it has a lot to do with me being a tour guide. I really like to share, and I also share knowledge. It's like two different things, and this is exactly, it's such a good platform for doing that. So, I am also familiar with what people say about Wikipedia, which is not a good source because you can't really tell whether it's a seventh, grade kid who just, mumbled something and uploaded it. And of course, there are probably lots of mistakes there, and people maybe did it, not in mistakenly or they meant to.
Naively, yeah.
Yeah, who knows? But the difference is that a book that was published is just there. You can't change anything, you can't fix anything. Unlike Wikipedia, if you find something that is wrong, you can always fix. And I always also say that Wikipedia is a great source for the beginners. I mean, for you to understand what's going around. And that's something I would always say to every scholar. I mean, you can't really base your knowledge on only one source, as
Right.
good as and reliable as it is. You have to find other sources, cross the information, see how they. And you know what? I got to tell you, this method of reading different sources or looking at different photos from different angles, you get a complete different story, and you can tell
Yes.
a new thing about what's happening around. I just want to say about Wikipedia, since we're talking about how not so reliable it is sometimes. You just mentioned the magazine that I write to
Skula.
for him. I'm so in
Right.
love with this magazine, really. I've ri been written to many different places, and I still do. I write to different magazines. But the thing that I really like about Sula is that you can never tell, you can never say that the information there is not so accurate or is wrong. And I got to tell you why. Because whenever I send an article or my column to Segula, there is this lady there. She's the academic editor, Scary Ofra, who's giving me such a hard time every time. She goes like, "Where do you take the source from? Can I see the copy? No, I need the whole thing. No, don't give me just the lines. I want to see the entire page." And she goes
Wow.
crazy. And I'm like, "Listen, what do you want?" And she said, "We are not going to publish in Segula anything that is not exactly 100% what's
Reliable.
in the book or in the newspaper." And you know what? She taught me a very, very strong lesson about how important it is to pass on the history as accurate and right as possible. And because we're living in a world that is so, into narratives, you can tell
Right.
what you feel and tell a new story, because that's how. No. History, to be really fair with history, is to make sure that you pass it on the right way. And sometimes it could be just a little word that you missed and forgot when you quoted from a book or from a newspaper, and you change the whole thing. And she's very right about this. That's why I really like Segula, because I know that every word that I write there, and every word that I read there is
It's
accurate.
credible.
And
Yeah.
it's so rare in our world to be accurate
Yes.
about this thing.
It is very rare. Many times the news page is the editorial page, and it's very hard to know where the accurate information it's come from. It just occurs to me, and I hope she's not listening to this because she's probably not, Ofra, because she's probably not going to like this comment. But I have learned that in Arabic, Ofra is like a very tough woman, let's put it that way, almost like a she devil. And that's why, because let's get this back to Tanakh, the places in the Tanakh that were called Ophrah, like having to do with Gideon, the judge, are not where we're going to find them today. Because if the Arabs came and settled there instead, either threw the Jews out, resettled there, they themselves have Jewish blood and they were forcibly converted, whatever it is, they've usually changed the name because it's not seen as a great name to have for a community, maybe to something like Taibeh, which means Tov, which means good. And so when doing research to find the biblical Ophrahs, you actually, in this case, wouldn't go to a place called Ophrah. This is true? You
Oh,
agree?
I don't know. I'm surprised. I mean, it sounds right. Oh, I was sure that Ophrah is just the feminine version of Ophir, which is, I think,
No.
gazelle or something like that, isn't it?
No, this is what I've heard. This is what I've heard because very often when doing research to find the biblical villages, so one of the things that's easy to do is to look at the name as it is, let's say today in Arabic, and then to kind of extrapolate or say, does it sound similar to this and this? And does that mean that this was the original village? And sometimes it works, but like you said, you need different tools. Whenever you're doing research, you can't just rely on one thing. So you can't just rely on the name. You have to look at the context, on the location, on what happened there, and if it's even possible that it happened there, given where it is, and the different personalities involved, and obviously the findings in the fields, be it the pottery or whatever it is. And then, yeah, and then do that. So, but let's not tell your academic researcher editor that. Geez. She's tied into the Tanakh, though.
When it comes to her job, really.
Yeah.
Admiration, real admiration.
Okay, and it can't be easy because I'm sure she doesn't get a lot of credit, but here on the show, at least she got the credit for being able to do that. But also for you on Wikipedia, because I know that it's become the battleground in terms of the political, the Israeli-Palestinian kerfluffle. You can look up, for example, Susia, as an example, which is an ancient village from 1500, 1600, 1700 years ago in the southern Hebron Hills. And you can get a completely different narrative depending on who was there last and putting up the information.
And you know what? We can't even fight it. I usually write for the Hebrew Wikipedia because it's easier for me to write in Hebrew. But I did try many times to write for the English Wikipedia, and I found out that this is a complete waste of time because we're downnumbered. And if I want to change something, and it's not here again, it's not about the narrative. We're talking about facts. So if, for example, I'm just giving an example that really happened, I wanted to change something that was written about the Six-Day War. It was just something really small about one of the battles that took place in Jerusalem. I don't really remember all the details. It was about the number. I think it was the number of casualties on our side. I'm not really sure, but it took them exactly a minute to overwrite my comment and my change. And you know what? It's a battle that will take forever. And it seems there are not too many Israelis who write for the English Wikipedia, so it's just a complete waste of time for us.
Wow.
I'm just saying the bottom line is that whoever reads the English Wikipedia and reads these articles about Israel, about the history of Israel, what you guys read is most of the time is nothing to do with facts, and it's that never to hear again.
So that's a hugely important thing for my listeners to hear, because I know many of my listeners are very interested in Israel, have a variety of opinions, but are interested in basing them on the facts, the conclusions that they come to. And to know that probably the first thing that pops up, which is Wikipedia, when you're putting anything in, is very, very flawed. So I'm not saying that you need to learn Hebrew, but there are different resources that you can use. If it's the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Israel's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, I think has a lot of information, let's say, about the Six-Day War. And there are other sites that that you can go to that'll be much more reliable than what has become one of the battlegrounds of this media war, or the Hasbara war, or the war of whatever we want to call it, the perception war of the reality of what's happened here in the Middle East. So,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
And then that's how I go back to Sgula. I'm sorry that I'm saying it, but as you can say, and you see, and I said it already, I love this article with this magazine, is because especially for English readers and speakers, which are not familiar with the Hebrew sources, and most of the source that we have about us, about the Jewish people, about the Jewish land is in Hebrew. So since the magazine is also published in English, this is an incredible source, real source, not narrative, but really fact that you can read, which you cannot read anywhere else. And I know about this source, and you can know that you can rely on it. It's
comforting. Right. No, it's not something to take for granted. So in normal days, when I'm roaming around Jerusalem and I see you in Jerusalem, I often have seen you leading soldiers.
Right.
There you are. And you look very young. But, when you're with a group of 18-year-olds, so they're all 18. What is that all about? Because I don't think a lot of people realize that, they think of the soldiers and they think of the army. There's a lot of education that goes on in the army as well. A lot of these kids, even though they came through the educational system, which, as an aside, I hope is going to get a major, major rehaul as part of everything that's going on with this pandemic. Where do you fit in when it comes to to guiding the soldiers during their service?
Well, first of all, it is surprising for many people to hear or see soldiers that are being guided in Jerusalem. But it's important to say that the army does not only give tours to the soldiers, but also it's the whole thing that is called in Hebrew, Tarbut Yom Aleph. It's like education of something.
Culture.
So
Yeah.
culture,
Yeah.
yeah, it's about our culture, and it comes from, if I understand it right, it comes from the very interesting thought where the army in Israel, the IDF, understand that this is probably the last chance to educate these youngsters. I mean, they've finished school, they're almost out there, you know, to do whatever they want. And this is our last chance to give something else. Sometimes it could be for kids who, for example, did not finish school right. They don't have all
Right.
the whatever it is that they need.
The matriculation exams,
Exactly, they can do it in the army. So it's like the last stop for us to do something with you, young man. So these tours in Jerusalem, but in many other places around the country, is part of this. It's kind of like, we don't know if your teacher in the 8th grade took you to Jerusalem, but we believe that every youngsters in Israel must be in the old city, must see the city of David, gotta go to the Western Wall, gotta see, you know, our sources. This is our
It's our
foundation.
history, and it's
Exactly.
what they're fighting for, literally, what they're fighting
Exactly. I mean,
for.
what are you fighting for if you don't understand where it all started? What's the point? I mean, that's so I usually guide tour guides, but I have this very warm, you know, corner in my heart to these tours. And I gotta tell you, they don't always listen, and they're there not because they chose to be there, but they were forced by their commander. But I try to be as nice and funny as I can because I do want it to be a good experience for them. I want them to remember how fun it was in Jerusalem, not just let's hear the history about King David, but no,
Right.
wow, this is really neat, connected to my forefathers. Isn't it amazing?
Do
That's the
you think that they know a lot when they come in, or you see through the questions that you get
not only that
that?
they don't know much. I have to tell you, sometimes I'm just standing there shocked in front of a young soldier, you know, men or women, telling them that this is their first time in Jerusalem. I was shocked to
Unbelievable.
hear that youngster is 2 years old, and I'm like, where do you do you live? And they go like, Bat Yam, not too far. I mean,
An
just take a,
hour. Yeah.
right? You know, sometimes some of them would only be in Jerusalem, would be to Jerusalem for like Teddy. It's like
Yeah.
going to watch a
A
soccer
soccer game.
Teddy Stadium. That's it. That's their experience from Jerusalem. And you know, that's why I think that's why the army understood that this is really something important to do, because some parents are not connected and they do not
Right.
understand the importance of this. This is our chance to you know, fix this.
Right. Or maybe the school didn't have a budget to take them on field trips or whatever it is, or they couldn't do it. Wow.
I'm not sure. You know what? I'm not sure about budgets, because I always say that time and money is about what's important, you know, what's on your agenda. And
Right.
if you don't find the time and you don't find the money for something, it's because it's not that important to you, right? There
Right.
you go.
As yeah, to mention once again the hopeful rehabilitation of the educational system as maybe the one of the silver linings of this cloud that we're under. So you said a few minutes ago that you are, well, you're raising 10th generation Jerusalemites. You yourself are ninth generation. I don't know if anybody's watching this on YouTube and can see Tamar's blonde hair and blue eyes. So where is your, I don't know about the blonde, I mean the blonde, my hair might be not be natural. I also have blonde hair, I
Mine is
haven't.
natural.
But
Yep.
yes, I've
Well,
seen
it's a
you for
good
a long
question.
time.
How come I live, you know, my family lived there for so many years? Actually, we have the dates. They came, they made Aliyah, they immigrated to the land of Israel in the year 1777. It was the
Wow.
Hasidic Aliyah from
From
Poland.
where? From Poland.
Yes.
Poland, yes,
Yep.
okay.
And it's a good question. How come I still get burned in the Mediterranean sun, right? Well, it's very simple. It's because they did not marry the non-Ashkenazi Jew. And you know what? It's not just our side to blame. It's not just the Ashkenazi Jews who married in between themselves, but also the Sephardi Jews were very much into just keeping it, you know, in the family. Let's just
Right.
And you know what? It's very sad. And it has a lot to do with money. It's because the communities were separated in the different cities, and were supported by Jews abroad from the specific countries, or even sometimes cities where they came from. So, for example, people from Warsaw, Poland, who lived in Jerusalem in this neighborhood called the Houses of Warsaw, Batei Warsza, they would get their money. I mean, if they give you
Stipends, whatever. Yeah, right.
By their friends or families who are still there in Warsaw. A guy from Warsaw marries a Sephardic girl in Jerusalem. Who's there? Who's supposed to, support them? So that's how it started. And you know what? I got to give all the credit to this incredible man from England who visited Jerusalem in the 19th century, Sir Moses Montefiore, who himself was a Sephardic Jew. He was from Italy, and he married an Ashkenazi girl, Yehudit. And he said, "No more with this. We have spent thousands of years in, in the diaspora, spread all over the world, and this is our time to get together." So he gave this prize of 100 golden Napoleon coins to every couple that would get married from, Sephardi and Ashkenazi. That was something like 10, I think somebody once told me $20,000.
Tremendous amount of money then, right?
Exactly. And you know what? It did work out. And I myself am married. My husband is Moroccan. I just was born in the wrong century for the time.
Okay. You didn't get the money. You married him for love. Okay,
Yep.
good.
My
Good.
older brother is married to a Yemenite girl. So we're working on it, both
And
of
your
us.
kids are all this beautiful mix. So
Yeah,
it's,
you know what?
that's what you
They're
see.
lighter than me. The plane would start to turn in the Mediterranean Sea, but I don't know. These very light genes are very strong. But
Yeah, I
okay,
suppose so.
I'll let them work on
But it's
darker.
much healthier also for the gene pool to have
Of
the
course.
mixes, so and weed out some of those nasty recessive genes. So
Yeah.
that's an amazing. So that part of your family is from Poland, or all both sides of your family? Everyone was from Poland?
Not at all. It was just my mother's side. My father's side, on the other hand, are Holocaust survivors, meaning my grandparents both are from Poland, Holocaust survivors who met in Haifa here in Palestine back then and got married. And then, so on one hand, and you know what? I think this is very significant, and you find it a lot in Israel today. You have people like me who are, on one hand, are so well rooted in the country and have a lot of, connections and a huge family on one hand, and then on the other hand are Holocaust survivors.
With nothing.
In way, in a way, it's really comforting because I don't know if my Zaidi, my grandfather, Kalman Rocher, I don't think when he came here from Poland completely, crushed. He lost everything in the Holocaust. And when he came here, I'm sure he could never imagine that his grandchildren, me, his granddaughter, is going to be a ninth generation born in Jerusalem. So this is the mixture. This is what Israel is all about. This is so exciting that we can make these mixtures of Sephardim and Ashkenazi, and newcomers and old.
And old timers.
It's the magic of this place, which you can never find anywhere else.
And I think you've answered now for me and for many of us why you love the stories. Because ultimately, it's not just about the date. It's about the people. It's about the people who made decisions. That entire nine generations or eight generations before you made decisions to stay. Not everybody stayed who came in the 1770s. Most, I would imagine, actually left at some point. But this whole line of yours, every single day, decided to stay in not very easy situations. If it was the Ottomans, if it was the British, it was the early years of Israel. And here you are being able to guide people around Israel, around Jerusalem, and show those layers, show how that all came through. And
And I always
see,
say
it
to
inspires
newcomers,
you.
and I always say to newcomers, to Olim Chadashim, who are always so, "Wow, you're a ninth generation." I'm like, "Listen, I did not do anything. I was just born. It's thanks to my forefathers who did not give up and stayed here and got, stuck their roots deep in the ground when other people left, as you said, or died of malaria, and they struggled and they said, we are staying." And you know what? You know what always symbolizes this in my eyes? We have the seven species of the land of Israel, right? There is one that is really missing, and that is the charuv, the carob tree. And wherever you look around, you see a carob tree. It's such an Eretz Yisrael, like the land of Israel tree. How come it's not a part of the seven species? So some people will say maybe because the fruits are not so good, but then come on, there are lots of other fruits or trees that are not so impressive, and they're still part of the seven
Right, right.
family. But with the shade, come on, it's such a great tree. So what's the thing? Why isn't it one of them? The answer is, do you know, by the way?
I know the answer.
The
It's
answer
not
is
indigenous to the land. It came in during the Romans.
Exactly. The
Right?
Romans brought it in. So, but you know what? It has been 2,000 years now. And when we look at the Chalub, we look at the carob tree, we're like, whoa, you're here. You're part of this
Right?
view. And that's what I always say I always say to newcomers, to Olim Chadashim. Right now, you don't feel connected, and your accent is so, you know, out there,
Right.
and you don't know what the
Right.
words, and you don't think. But don't worry. One day, the people here are going to look at your children, grandchildren, grand-grandchildren. Doesn't really matter, but it's going to happen. They're going to say, "What? What do you mean you're not originally from here? Of course you are. I mean, you're here. You're part of this incredible story of the land of Israel."
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful mosaic. And even the sabra plant, which is associated with the Israelis, right? The little cactus fruit, prickly on the outside, sweet on the inside, is also apparently a transplant from, I don't know, Mexico or somewhere there. One of my kids did not something very bright and picked one up during Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, and we spent the rest of the day, even though it had already been cleaned of the needles. Yeah, so we had to look for tweezers. So, right.
Oh wow!
Speaking of the gene pool, yeah, exactly.
You know what? I just came back from North Carolina. We were
right.
in this little city of Greensboro, which most people never heard of. Because whenever I say North Carolina, people would ask Charlotte
mm-hmm.
or Raleigh, but no, Greensboro is the third city. Such a small city, so quiet, and the pace is so slow. And you know what? I got back here less than 2 months ago, and I'm getting crazy of the mess, especially on you know, in the streets when I'm driving, and people try to kill me. I'm like, what's going on? I don't remember it like this. How
okay.
crazy!
So you have a little taste of what it's like now. What I went through already, almost 33 years ago. As an Olah, as someone coming from the United States to the Middle East, which is a lot more chaotic and a lot more rude, but I find a lot more warm, and you know, you can look for the beautiful things. But yeah,
exactly.
I never wouldn't mind sometimes. Exactly.
What you said about the Sabra. I mean, I see old thorns all the time, all around me, but there is nothing that can be sweeter than they really care. They people around me really care about each other.
Yes.
And it was very significant when all this COVID thing started. The people in Israel, their first reaction was to ask, how can we help? I have my mother-in-law living in Katamon. She lives all by herself. She's an old lady. And it was amazing for Pesach, for Passover, there are people, a knock on her door over and over again. People are there to give her more, to give her food, to make sure she's got enough food for the holiday. And she was like, what? I don't need so much. People
also, she's Moroccan, so she's probably an amazing cook. So I don't know why people are giving her food. Yes.
Yeah, but I was in America when the whole thing happened, and I looked around, and what I see is the Americans going to buy weapons because
wow.
they were scared of each other. And I was overwhelmed. I said, this is such a nice place I'm living in, but the first reaction is for you as an American is go buy weapons. When a thing like this happens in Israel, people started to look around and see how they can help. And I'm not saying that everybody was like this. I'm just saying the
right.
environment of what you felt around, was it fear from each other or was it warmth towards each other? And this is very
wow.
significant.
Wow. So it sounds like the 2 years were really interesting for you in many ways.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Gave you a very good perspective. And I'm sure your kids also had an important time for them in their development.
And lots of English.
And
for the
lots
kids.
Of English.
And I learned a lot of English words. The first one, I would never forget it because we just got to America and I needed to buy a desk to my daughter, but I needed that part with the shelves on top. Oh my God, how would you say that in English? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
I know what you mean. I didn't know there was a special
so
word.
So the word
okay.
is hutch. I needed a desk with a hutch.
With a hutch, right. So now you know. That'll
yep.
come in very handy, especially if you buy rabbits or something.
Oh,
that's also what it's called. A cage for rabbits is also called a hutch. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you
okay.
for that.
No problem.
wording.
No problem. Tamara, Dani, thanks so much for joining me today. I look forward to your articles in Skoola Magazine every single month, and or 2 months. I don't even know. I'm always happy to see when it shows up. And every month. Mm-hmm. And I think they have some kind of sale going on right now. I don't think you can write to them and say, we heard you on Rejuvenation. You know, I don't think Europe can do that, but you can try. Who knows? But it really gives a beautiful glimpse, beautiful stories about Israel, about the Jewish people, about the journey, about personalities that you ordinarily would never hear about. And I think it's really a tremendous addition to the Jewish world, especially for those, as you said, who can't read Hebrew and therefore are really locked out of maybe 90% of the really interesting things that are told. So thank you so much for joining. I'm looking forward to seeing you out on the streets, you with the group.
It's going to happen.
No. It's going to happen. It'll happen. Bezrat Hashem, 5781 will be better. But that, first of all, that everyone should be well, okay? Where I'm living here, a lot of my neighbors are either in isolation, not because the government mandated it, but because they were in contact with someone, and people who are getting sick all the time. So the main thing that we need is health or the vaccine or something to figure out so that the world can get back to whatever it needs to be, and we can go and travel and do the things that we love to do without fear and without worry. So that's the main thing. And thank you so much for joining me today on Rejuvenation, and really be well and keep. And I know that it's great for you because you can keep on writing no matter where you are, and that helps all of us. So very much appreciate it. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in today. You can write to me, eve@thelandofisrael.com, and with comments or questions or suggestions or anything else that you'd like. And I really hope that wherever you are, that you are having, first of all, if you're in the Jewish holidays, that they're going smoothly and beautifully, and you're able to be with people that you love, and that maybe this really will be some kind of new beginning for the world in terms of changing what's been going on for the last few months. So take care, everyone. Eve Harrow, thanks to Tabitha, and thanks to Ben and everyone else at the station. Take care, everybody. Back next week, God willing. Goodbye for now.
Shalom, everybody. This is Jeremy Gimpel from the Land of Israel Network, but also from the Land of Israel Fellowship. Today, Ari and I and Tehila Gimpel are preparing for the Biblical Feasts. We have members from 31 countries joining us every week, Sunday, live at 6 p.m. For those that can't make it live, they get a direct recording sent to them. We're growing together. We're learning together. We're celebrating together. The gates are open for all who want to come and join. And so this is a personal invitation to all the listeners out there. If you want to join the Land of Israel Fellowship, just go to thelandofisrael.com/fellowship, and you can join us tomorrow as we prepare for the big days ahead.